Welcome to the Tipsy Tennis Podcast. I'm in South Beach, Miami with Guy Tennis, otherwise known as Guy Cunha, or Guy Cunha, otherwise known as Guy Tennis. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So the first question I usually like to ask my guests is, how did you get started playing tennis?
This is interesting. It's cool that I've got to tell this story. So coming from Brazil, all the kids play soccer. I suck at it, always did. Always as a kid, that's not what I thought of, but I definitely sucked. And three of my best friends invited me to join their tennis class. There was one spot remaining. And luckily, I was a member of this club where I played my whole career. And that's how we started. I loved it. I was 9 years old.
You started when you were nine years old? That's a little bit
late, yeah, for sure. And I loved it from probably the first lesson. All my friends quit. Two friends quit after maybe 2 months. Another one played another year. Uh-huh. And that was about it. And then I stayed. And 2 years later, I flipped my school schedule so I could train with the main team of the club. And that's how you got started.
What's the tennis culture like in Brazil?
Very nice, actually. It's a lot.
It's popular?
I want to say popular. It's definitely less popular than here. It's mainly in clubs. We have pretty much no public courts. Maybe there is, I'm not kidding, there is maybe 30 public courts in the whole country. And we're talking like a 200 million people
country.
Yeah, it's Brazil. There's literally no public courts. It's all in clubs, which makes it nice if you're a member of one, but if you're not, the barrier is close to impossible.
Wow. And so you started playing tennis, and then where did it go from there? You were playing like tournaments, playing competitively.
Yeah, I started playing at 9, and then at 11, I started playing tournaments. I started having some decent results maybe when I was 13. Mm-hmm. Like first few years, I was only getting kicked. Kicked out like completely. And then started having some results. Then at 14, I won nationals in doubles. And then that's where I started like really liking it. Like I liked from the beginning, but then that's when you start like, okay, I'm hooked now, you know?
Uh-huh. Wow, that's pretty. So you won the doubles national 14 and under in Brazil?
I won 14 and under, then I won 16 and under, and I won 23 and under. Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah, not bad.
So were you like, what was your ranking in Brazil?
Singles, my best. I think I was 18. Mm-hmm. 18 in the country, and then doubles, I got to number 3. Yeah. Number 3, another 18, I think.
And then you played in college as well, right?
Yeah, I played here at Kaiser University in West Palm Beach. Played 4 years. We had a good team. We made national finals 2 out of my 4 years.
Is it? Because I know there's like a different league. Is it NCAA or the NIA?
It's NIA.
NIA.
So it's not that much different from NCAA. It's very similar to a D2, the type of school that are part of it. Mm-hmm. And like the best teams are pretty comparable. Like maybe the best 5 NIA teams are very comparable to the best 5 NCAA D2 teams. Mm-hmm.
What was the college recruitment like process?
So I was sponsored by a streaming brand called Genesis. And in January 2014, I came in August 2014. Welcome to Miami. January of 2014, I took a trip here and then I visited a few D2 schools. And in the end of the trip, I went to see the Genesis headquarters, which was here in Dania Beach. Mm-hmm. And they had a partnership with, at the time, the college was called Northwood. Mm-hmm. And he was like, hey, let me give the call to the coach. Maybe you can meet him tomorrow. And that's how it happened. I went, I tried out the next day, and he was like, oh, I want you. And that's how it happened.
That's pretty cool. And so now that was in 2014. So that was like 10 years ago.
10 years ago, yeah.
And you've been living in Miami since, or you're moving around a little bit?
So we lived in West Palm, where it was the school for 4 years. And then we moved here in 2018.
Okay. Nice. And so now you're a full-time coach,
full-time
right?
coach from the moment I graduated. Took a few interviews, could never do it.
What'd you study in school?
I actually have a lot of degrees that I never used. I have a double major in sports management and international business. Uh-huh. And I have a minor in marketing and finance. But I never used any of them.
Nah, just tennis.
Yeah.
I guess I
could say I use some of the skills I learned in sports management, but that's about it.
Yeah, I hear that. I was in when I was in school, I studied. I was like playing like some high level junior tournaments, and then when I went to school, I studied. I got a degree in physics.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and then I was a software engineer for a couple of years, and then I quit and started talking about tennis and drinking beer.
The dream.
It's the life, man.
That's a dream.
Listen, I'm not going to lie. It doesn't pay as much as a software engineer does. But
not yet.
Not yet.
The yet is the word there.
Yeah, but spending time on the tennis court, it's nothing really compares to it. Like, you're outside, you get to be outside, you get to talk to people, you're engaging, and, like, especially as a coach, you know, you're able to, like, improve people's tennis and make them happier and make them, you know, more engaged in the sport, which is pretty awesome.
It's very fulfilling, for sure. Much more fulfilling than just sitting on the desk and getting a paycheck.
Yeah, and so, like, you also have a tennis page on Instagram, Gi Tennis. How did that get started, and how long have you been doing that?
I've been talking about doing it maybe 2 years ago. Like, oh, I got it started. I never did it, and then the summer of 2022, I was like, no, I'm gonna start it. And then the summer here, it's a little bit less busy. It's way too hot. A lot of people travel, so I was like, I had more time. And I started picking up. Then I went to the US Open in 2022, and like I made a couple of videos that got to over 1 million views over there.
Nice.
I'm like, that started impulsionating. Like, the first, I want to say 2,000 followers are the hardest. Once you get past that little barrier, which is not that little, probably the amount of time it takes you to get to 2,000, unless you get very lucky and like really make a few very viral videos, probably takes almost the same as getting to 10K. Like, I probably took me maybe 5 months to get to 2,000, and then 5 months later I had 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool.
Yeah, for me, the first 1,000 followers was like,
it's
such a grind.
It's tough, you know, because you got no recognition, you're getting maybe like 2,000 views and like maybe 50 likes, you get stuff. And then you make a few videos, they go viral, and then that goes on.
Yeah, and so what? Tell us about like what kind of content do you make?
Mainly coaching content, a lot of technique-wise. I feel like it's a topic that not that many people talk about it or talk well about it. And I try to simplify it for the normal person. Like, you see some videos talking about technique, and they talk about like the 33-degree angle of the arm. Like, what does that even mean? Like, how a normal person is going to understand that? Or like, they talk like the shape of the fade and the fake. And I'm like, dude, like, nobody even understands that. Like a full-time coach doesn't understand. Could you imagine a kid getting that? There's no way. So I try to make simple but effective tips in normal words that don't complicate things, and that's the main thing. And then I have a few funny videos, like, just to break the ground, but usually content.
What's the most common mistake you see beginners make on the tennis court?
Thinking that power comes from the arms, and also the main reason why people get hurt. If you actually watch professional tennis players, a very little amount of players get tennis elbow, to almost none. And it's the most common injury in amateur tennis because they try to muscle the ball. Everything comes from the arm. They don't understand that power actually comes from the legs.
Mm-hmm.
It starts all the way on the ground until you reach your racket. So understanding that's probably the biggest mistake. And then technique-wise, not accepting that you need to use continental grip for serving volleys, but that takes a little bit of more time. But most common is definitely trying to play from the arm.
What was the best piece of advice that you got from a coach?
There is a couple. One, I actually have videos about it. One of them, when I was very little, I was maybe 10 years old, like, he was like, you should grab the racket like a little bird. I have a video about it, like, talk
like
about it.
Bird.
Yeah, because a little bird that you don't want to let escape, but you don't want to kill it.
Uh-huh.
And that's how tight you should grip the racket. So, like, if you grip too tight, you kill the bird. If you grip tight enough for the grip bird not to fall, that's how tight you should grip it. Obviously, at contact point, different levels, maybe you got to grip a little bit tighter so the racket doesn't move, but that was a good piece of advice. Another one he told me was to not ever think that one ball should be the last ball in the point. So whenever you get an approach, what I see a lot of people make mistakes, you actually made a few of them now when we played, was that that ball you try to hit a winner, when it doesn't need to be a winner. You move the person to the right side with good margin, 6 feet between the line, and that's enough to close on the next ball, and that's how you should think about playing the game. No ball that you actually hit it should be like the last ball in the point, because that makes you miss a lot, so much more.
Mm.
Shout out to Edinho. We'll send that video to him later.
That's a really good one. That's actually something I was thinking about when we were playing, because I mean there are a couple times where I was slapping it. I was moving you around.
Yeah.
But then there are other times where I'm like, okay, this point needs to end right now, and it's either win or
you're probably getting tired. You don't want to run maybe two more balls.
Oh man, I'm so out of shape. I was like, I was traveling for a couple months, and I was just eating, and just I was walking around. I was like, you know, I wasn't doing nothing, but I gained like, I don't know, 10 pounds, and I came back only like a week ago, so I'm like trying to get back into shape. And you could hear the commentary.
I'm actually talk about it. When it's 7-6 to him, I play a point that I could have won like 3 balls before. I'm like, this point's going to pay dividends in the end. He's going to die after this. And I won like 4 points in a row afterwards.
Oh, man. Yeah. And so going back to like what you said with like, you know, the don't think that any shot is the last ball of the the point.
Sure, there's an exception. You gotta float it for an overhead right next to the ball. Yeah, I should put that ball away. But like, like no ground strokes, you should actually think. You should hit up. Let's rephrase that. You hit winners by not trying to hit winners.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you move the person well around, again, there is exceptions. You're a 7-foot tall guy that can hit. It's a different story. I'm a 5'8 guy. I'm not very tall. I don't have the power to do it.
Uh-huh.
But, like, so if you move the person well and you play for good margins, little by little, the holes will open until you actually get the right opportunity to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so many people miss the short ball. Like, I have a few videos about it. Like, why they miss a short ball? Because they go for too much.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't feel confident in the net. That's why they go for that much, right? But that ball is like, it's a ball to set up. It's called an approach. Otherwise, it's called something else. It's an approach to win the ball. So you approach the ball to their weaker side or the side they're not at, and then you finish on the ball. That's how you should be thinking about those balls.
What was one of the toughest challenges that you had to overcome in your own tennis career?
That's a really great question. Wow. I never thought about that. I don't know if I would call it, I guess it is. Like when you are in high school or middle school, like how you have to handle going to school, doing well at school, or doing at least decent at school, and still being able to travel maybe 15, 20 weeks a year when you're playing competitive tennis. It's probably one of the hardest things to juggle around. And then on the tennis game, I don't know, probably the day-to-day grind of like having to work for it. To be very honest, I was not the best at it.
Mm-hmm.
My students, please don't hear that. I was definitely not the best at it, you know, like I was definitely chubby, and my coach would tell me like, hey, you gotta lose weight and all that stuff, and you learn the hard way, you know. Like that's probably why I did well in doubles and I never did that well in singles, because I was just overweight, like couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably one of the things that I should have fixed and taking more care of my fitness.
Mm-hmm.
If I had done those two things, it would probably have been a different story, to be honest.
So would you say, if you can go back and start from scratch, would you say that's the biggest thing that you would do differently?
If you would think just tennis level, yeah. You know, like I would have focused a lot more on fitness and eating well and sleeping well and like doing all this stuff right. Because the game comes. Like, but if you don't have those two things, when you start playing a higher level, eats you up. Like it just there's no other way around it. When you start playing hard level, everybody's good. There is nobody's bad anymore. So like if you're a little bit behind on these shots, you're always getting a little bit late or you're getting tired too easy, like all these things will cost you in the long run, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you think tennis career, that's it. But you know, at the same time, like I can't complain about what tennis gave to me, you know. Maybe if I was better, maybe I would have played D1 God knows where. Maybe I would have played, I got offers to go to the north to play D1 full rides, but I wanted Florida.
Yeah.
Maybe if I was bad, I would have played, I don't know, a northeast place that I wouldn't be so happy about. I wouldn't have met my wife. I wouldn't have done all that stuff. So it probably doesn't, in the end of the day, it works out. Uh-huh. Like I moved to Florida. I coach now. Maybe I would be playing pro now, struggling, being 300 in the world, not making one penny. You know, like there's all these things that can, it works out in the end.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite part about tennis?
That you can always improve.
Yeah.
Like, I think there is no plateau of what you can do. Like, my client just arrived now to play. He's 6 years old and had cancer, fought for it. Now he's coming back to it and improving every day, you know? Like, this is one of the most fulfilling things as a coach. And it's also it's nicest about playing tennis. Like, you can help each other, you know? Like, you can, and you can always improve. Also, sometimes to see your improvement takes much longer. As you start getting better, if you can get better like 0.5%, that 0.5% is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're serving, let's say 70% and now you're serving 71%, it's huge.
Yeah.
Like it in the long run, it's huge. You win so many more easy points, and that's probably what I think I like the most.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people, they get like pigeonholed into like the way they think that like they want to see the results like quickly. I mean, nowadays everybody wants everything.
Well,
like,
it's TikTok, right? The TikTok generation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants everything so quick, and tennis is great because it really teaches the other way around.
Yeah.
There is no shortcut. There is no shortcut. That's one thing that it's annoying on Instagram or whatever you see tips. Like, everybody's looking for that magic formula. And there is no magic formula. Yes, there are coaches that know a little bit more. Yes, there are coaches that are going to be better for you because they will understand you better. Yes. Now, if you're looking for that magic thing, if I fix my wrist on this thing, now I don't miss a forehand anymore. Like, these things don't exist. Like, they don't not exist. Like, somebody would have found it. Mm. Tennis is pretty much solved in a way. Like, there is the fundamentals you got to follow. There's so many ways that you can hit the forehand and still get the right fundamentals. But in the end of the day, so many things that it's work.
There's no shortcuts. You got to spend the hours on the court. You got to spend the hours off the court.
Which are probably even more important.
Yeah, definitely. There's like, I've said this before, like, you know, failing to prepare is preparing to fail.
100%.
And so if you're not doing the things that you need to do off the court.
For sure.
It doesn't matter what you do on court because it's.
Yeah.
And another thing that I see, you know, as part of this like long process is like if you're playing, let's say, you get a lesson once a week, maybe twice a week. At that rate, because you're not playing so much, you're just like, it's maintenance. You're staying at the same level.
Right.
And you need to do like 3-4 times a week to start to see that like little improvement. And then once a week is just maintenance. And if you do like once every 2 weeks, now that one you got to get back to the same level, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing, like, sometimes my clients, they get busy and they have to work and they can't play. And it becomes like, every time we're playing, it's almost like we're just revisiting what we did before because it makes no sense to try to learn something new when you can't do what you should already be doing, right? So you got to put in the time. Even if you're an amateur, you got to get at least like an hour in, like play an hour back and then maybe play some matches. If you can play some matches in between your lessons, that's the best thing. Because you don't learn just from lessons. You got to play.
Yeah.
You got to play. If you don't play, there is no way.
You got to do it on your own.
You can take 6 hours of lessons a week. If you do not play, you are not learning how to play the game. It does not matter. You can be the best coach in the world. You got to figure out on your own a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it feels like I think one of the best teachers is just experience.
Yeah, it's no doubt.
Going, playing tournaments, just getting heartbroken and just getting out and keep on fighting for it and just... like the coaches, you know, they'll teach you, but at the end of the day, they can't do it for you.
Yep.
You need to do it yourself. And like, you know, tennis wouldn't be tennis if like you didn't have the ups and downs. Like if you're not failing, then you're not doing something right, in my opinion.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things like the pressure of a match, even if you're playing recreationally, it's completely different.
Yeah.
Like it's completely different. You might not feel like that in a match. You might not feel you're making a mistake in a match. It's just when you're practicing, you don't feel that because you don't have the pressure. You're playing free. Yeah. Now, when you go play a match, I haven't missed one forehand all week, and you go play and you can make one. And it's like, it's just because that pressure happens, you know?
Yeah, and what's your least favorite thing about tennis?
Least favorite thing about tennis?
What's the thing that gets under your skin?
I think it's, no matter how long you played, if we stop playing for a while, especially your timing drops instantly. Like, instantly. You get it back, yes, but your timing at the moment drops instantly.
Yeah.
There is no way. If you stop playing for a while, yes, you get back, but it'll take you a while.
I was pretty like happy with the way I played today because I haven't been playing. I think in the last like month.
Yeah.
I played maybe twice.
Uh huh.
No, once.
Oh wow.
I played once and it was a few days ago in New York.
Yeah.
And then I played for 10 minutes today at the Racquetex thing. So and even then I felt like I'm like shit. My timing is so bad. But luckily, when I came here, you motivated me, and I'm like, listen, I'm not going to come here and play like a scrub. I got to...
It was good competition. It was fun.
Yeah. What are your plans for the foreseeable future with your tennis? You want to continue coaching and growing your tennis brand?
Yeah. What I'm looking for next is to get my own facility so I can run a club / academy, but a little bit different, more like individualized, not like a factory, like... Take not as many players, but make it very, very, very nice, especially at least to the players that really want to play. Mm-hmm. And then have a recreational side a little bit more open, really fun and that. My mod is have fun, get better. So, like, if you're not, like, the if you don't really want to play, don't want to really do the sacrifice, we can still get you better and make you have fun, mm-hmm. even though we know your cap is much lower, but that's fine for 99% of people, and that's completely cool. Uh-huh. You know, like, so that's definitely next, and then this summer, we're going to run a summer camp for the first time, so we're excited for that.
Nice.
And I'll keep coaching for sure, but mainly now it's trying to grow the business to something bigger. Fortunately, I can't grow myself anymore, I'm just one. Uh-huh. So I need to get a facility so I can actually make it nicer.
You mentioned you have a wife. Do you have a kid?
I don't have a kid. I have two dogs. Two big dogs.
Two big dogs. If you do have a kid, do you want them to play tennis?
Yes, you'll play tennis.
To what? Are you going to coach them?
Until they're 10.
Until they're 10? Until they're 10?
Because I'll teach them all the right fundamentals, and then when they reach a competitive side, I'll throw to a coach that wants it. Don't want to lose. I don't have kids, so I'm guessing it. But I don't want to lose the relationship with my kid as a dad. And when you're the coach and the dad, for the kid to differentiate, that's very hard. You see, yes, there are coaches, there are dads and daughters and kids that made it, but most of them have no relationship with the dad. And for me, the relationship with the dad is probably more important. Mm-hmm. Serena doesn't talk to her dad. Alex doesn't talk to his dad. All these guys that make it, yes, the Sispa talks to his dad. But you know, like it's tough to manage both things for a kid. Imagine like the coach is screaming at you all day as he should, because sometimes you're messing it up. But then you get home and you have the same guys screaming at you to clean your room, to fix your mess, to wash your dishes. It's tough for a kid to differentiate both things. Mm. So I want to teach them all the fundamentals. I want us to become competitive. I'll give him to a good coach that I'll trust.
Has tennis taught you any larger life lessons? I mean, that was a pretty good,
I think there is no... It teaches that hard work pays off, and there is not really a shortcut in life. You gotta work for it. Yes, you get lucky sometimes, and luck does play a part. You get lucky that you build the right place in the right time, but you make your own luck.
I've been pretty lucky so far since coming here. I had a lot of cool things that are happening. I love this place. This place,
Miami's awesome, man. Hope you move here.
Yeah,
it's definitely the magic city.
Yeah, and so that will conclude
awesome, man.
This one. Any shout outs you want to give? Anything?
Thank you for having me. I mean, say thank you to my sponsors that have been with me for a while. Yonex, Osaka for Padel, and On that I just signed contract this past week. So this one I'm very excited about.
That's awesome.
And that's it.
All right.
My wife, obviously.
On the count of three, we're going to say stay tipsy. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Stay tipsy. Thanks, man.
It's going to come out great.
I think it was good. That was pretty good.